Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Washington. Here are some of the top stories making news across Sudan, South Sudan, and the rest of Africa this Monday, December 23rd, 2024. An official with South Sudan's Ministry of Health says Unity State is under siege.
90 death cases, as we are talking now. We are still to receive the update for today, but we also have more death cases, both the hospital death cases and the community death, the people that are dying in the community, because there are some people that are being brought into the facility when they are already dead.
And Kenya fights gender-based violence.
Kenya's security report this year has been dominated by the violence and killings of women and girls at the hands of their family members, neighbors, and others. According to authorities, there have been more than 7,100 cases of gender-based violence.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Authorities in South Sudan say they are battling cholera in hotspots across the country. Several border communities in South Sudan with high volume of travel have reported cases of the disease with record number of fatalities. Health officials in Unity State say so far 90 people have died from the disease. John Moodball is the Director General in the Ministry of Health in Unity State. He says he's still waiting for intervention from Juba.
Since the start of the cholera crisis, we have received like 3,580 cumulative cases for cholera infection. And the death cases have also risen up, and they have reached up to 90 death cases, as we are talking now. We are still to receive the update for today, but we also have more death cases, both the hospital death cases and the community death, the people that are dying in the community, because there are some people that are being brought into the facility when they are already dead, those who are living in hard-to-reach areas. The situation is really sad. If we can reach up to 90 death cases, it's really a great loss to the people of Unity State and also South Sudan in particular.
Talk to me about the efforts from the Ministry of Health, the State Ministry of Health, in terms of reaching out people who are in remote areas, because you are struggling in the midst of challenges. Talk to me about your efforts to reach people who are not able to come to the hospital.
As we are talking right now, the Ministry of Health, Unity State and its partners have actually, extended the cholera outbreak response activities to the hard-to-reach areas by establishing a few cholera treatment units. You know, we have CTU, which is cholera treatment unit in Budang, PHTC, and we also have some ORPs, the oral rehydration points, also being operated in that side of, Tarawang Yele and also Makwai. So these are the places that are actually, with the highest population rate of the community are living there, and it is really hard for them to come to the community. So that's why we are trying to extend the services to them so that if there are more severe cases, or if the patient becomes more unconscious, then they are easily referred by the health workers there to the cholera treatment centers or the nearby cholera treatment units. So basically, we are actually coordinating with the partners, and they are really working hard to make sure that people who are not able to access cholera services from far areas are being brought, are being referred, we always have, ambulance on standby. If we actually receive calls from the facilities which are far, and then these cars are sent to go and bring this patient from those far places, and this is the only mean that we are actually doing now to make sure that the spread is interrupted, the spread of the infection or the transmission is interrupted.
The number of people who have died of the disease so far in Unity State has risen to 90. That's a lot. And I have been trying to get senior officials from the ministry, or from the National Ministry of Health, and they are telling me they are in meetings. What is the response from the National Ministry of Health? What have they sent to you to help you control this widespread or outbreak?
Actually, what I heard from the Ministry of Health, specifically the Undersecretary in the National Ministry of Health, is that I had a chat with her yesterday, because I'm already in Bentiu. I came to Bentiu already, and she told me that the OCVs that I requested last time to be allocated to Unity State will be arriving in the country on Wednesday or Thursday this week. That is only the arrival in Juba. But I don't know when will they be, brought this side to Unity State. Basically, if they arrive in the country by Wednesday or Thursday, that means it will be easy for the National Ministry of Health and the partners to airlift them to Unity State, so that the vaccination campaign can be carried on as soon as possible.
That's John Moot Ball, the Director General in the State Ministry of Health in Unity State. He was speaking with me from Bantu this past hour. The UN World Food Programme has condemned an airstrike that killed its staff in Sudan's Blue Nile state on Sunday. The UN humanitarian coordinator in Sudan warned the warring parties to respect facilities of aid agencies who are providing much-needed support to Sudanese who are trapped inside the country without help. Both sides in the conflict say they did not carry out the airstrike. We'll bring updates on that situation when we have adequate information. The Kenyan government has recorded more than 7,000 cases of sexual and gender-based violence since September of last year. Included in that number are 100 documented cases of women and children since August of 2024 alone. The country's Interior Ministry has established a special security team to deal with growing violence against women and girls. Mohammed Yusuf reports for VOA from Nairobi.
Kenya's security report this year has been dominated by the violence and killings of women and girls at the hands of their family members, neighbors, and others. According to authorities, there have been more than 7,100 cases of gender-based violence since September 2023. Sarah Wambui says she was violently attacked one Thursday morning. The 40-year-old left her husband of 20 years after he violently abused her. Her husband did not take her departure lightly.
He attacked me on 18 January 2024 and he stabbed me all over. 38 stabs. From my face, the entire body, even my internal organs, my kidney and my liver were affected. I have been in hospital. I was just discharged in August.
Speaking last week, Foreign Affairs Minister and Acting Interior Minister Musalia Mudavadi said the number of incidents of sexual and gender-based violence against women worries security officers.
Nairobi County recorded the highest number of SGBV cases, while Samburu and Mandera counties had the lowest incidents. There are 100 murders of women from August to November 24th, 2024. So far, the Directorate of Criminal Investigations has completed investigations on these and the majority are pending before court.
2 weeks ago, hundreds of people took to the streets in Nairobi demanding an end to the killings of women. Though the protest was dispersed by police using tear gas and making arrests, the police handling of the protesters angered the demonstrators, human rights groups and women's organizations. They accused authorities of not taking the attacks and killings of women seriously. Wambui's accused attacker is out of prison and has been threatening to kill her, she says. The mother of two has been moving from one place to another to avoid him.
Right now, my life is in danger because the perpetrator is out. Yeah, he's out and he has vowed that if we finish me off, the case will be kind of discarded. So I'm actually in hiding.
Human rights researchers say patriarchal views and a lack of protection are some of the reasons behind the attack on women and girls. Njoki Gashanja is a human rights defender. She says the number of abused women may be even higher than reported.
Most of those numbers come from, you know, low-income areas where there's just a lot of poverty, and that is linked to a lot of violence. So these numbers might sound staggering, but for people who are on the ground documenting these cases on a daily basis, we know that there are even more people who have not even been covered by those who made the headlines. And this is a catastrophe that must be addressed by the government.
According to the Gender Violence Recovery Center, one in three Kenyan women has experienced sexual violence before the age of 18, and 38% of married women have experienced physical violence. The government has set up a security team to address attacks on women and ensure justice for the victims. Meanwhile, while many women and mothers prepare to celebrate Christmas with their families, Wambui will be moving from place to place, just trying to stay alive. Mohammed Yusuf, VOA News, Nairobi.
From Nairobi, we go to South Africa, where former President Jacob Zuma is calling for unity among all leaders of black political parties. This, he said, will form part of efforts to gain 2/3 parliamentary majority with an aim to reclaim lands taken away from local people by settlers. His comments came as his MK party, the main opposition group, marked its first year anniversary since its formation at the Moses Mabhida Stadium in Durban, KwaZulu-Natal. But critics condemn his call as racist and divisive. For more about the opposition party's anniversary and its performance so far on the South African political landscape, my colleague Peter Kloti reached out Nalmulo Ndela. He is spokesperson for the MK party.
We're certainly a force to be reckoned with in the political landscape in South Africa. And, you know, within what I'd call a politically volatile country and environment, the resounding response that we receive from South Africans is just a clear confirmation of the pulse of the country, in a sense that there was no other solution of hope for our people. And with the entrance of Mkhonto's in the landscape of the political landscape in this country, and the resounding response vote that we received, that was, by the way, we know very well, rigged, it's not a true reflection, and we believe we did win the elections, demonstrates that Mkhonto's is loved by the people. He's got a leader that's trusted by the people. Mkhonto Sizwe is going to be the incoming government. Now, what have we achieved? We've achieved a lot. We have been tested by our adversaries, as you'd know, with all the trials and tribulations that we've had leading up to the elections, court cases left, right, and center that we've won. And with all of those hoops and challenges, we overcame and became the official opposition within 6 months.
Former President Zuma is urging black-led political parties in South Africa to unite under a single banner. Well, this is being taken as implying that the MK party will lead such a formation. Is this what the MK party is looking at?
Absolutely. We're saying that black parties must unite and vote as one. Because without a consolidated vote, we will never be able to achieve or to dismantle this imperialistic system that we have, which has entrenched itself extremely well and continues to dominate by virtue of political parties, specifically black political parties, you know, forming their own little fiefdoms. And that's the problem. So it's been a divide and conquer strategy that has worked since day one, when this country in 1652, when our problem started, when the Biafran Rebellion arrived on the Western, in the Western Cape lands.
But Ndlela, some of his critics are saying that this is a very racist and divisive cause that doesn't unify the country as a whole. Your response to that?
Well, that's very funny, because I can tell you now that's probably coming from the number one racist in this country. It is for exactly that. Mkhonto is a platform for all South Africans that want to see change. And you've heard me say this before. You know, that are progressing, that want to see change. But yes, the majority of the vote lies with black parties. Why is it that when we, as EFF, NK, and the ANC can come together, we don't do so? It is because there's monies that are being used to keep us separate. There's monies that are being used to infiltrate the system to ensure that we do not black vote as a black vote. We should not be scared to reflect on the fact that we're the majority. And yes, the black vote must take majority in terms of policy posture, when it's exactly the black people in this country that are suffering. It's not black, white people that stay in the townships. It's black people. Out of all the children that have been dying from snacks that have been buying in tuck shops in the township are all black. So why must we be scared to talk about the fact that, yes, indeed, it is the black people that are the most downtrodden, be reduced or deduced to racism? There's no racism within Mkhonto. We have black people, we have white people, we have Indian people, we have colored people. The people that are racist, we know who those people are. And if you just have to look at their policy posture, because they want to continue to control this economy in this country and control the land that they stole. So we can't be apologetic about the fact that, you know, we have to consolidate as black parties and then it has to be seen as racist. No, those that are thinking of racism are the ones that are racist.
That's my colleague Peter Clotty speaking with the spokesperson of Jacob Zuma's MK party. Listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, analysts say crime rates in Nigeria has risen. That story is coming up right after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what skill would you most like to master?
I would love to learn how to use my hands. That is craft work, making the baskets and doing more of the clay artwork.
So I think I will go technology any day, anytime. So mastering what I do already, which is practically technology, which is software development, applications development, analysis and data mining.
I would love to play the organ. I love it. I love the sound. I would want to have it at home to play to my family.
Now many people don't like to be teachers. So for me, I'm willing to be.
I appreciate people that I can sing, because I can't sing myself and I don't have a very good voice. So I will go for singing.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Some Nigerian analysts have raised concern about a report which says Nigeria paid more than $1 billion in ransom to kidnappers. Mike Bonye has more from Lagos.
Dr. Mohamed Sani Abubakar is a senior lecturer in the Department of Military Studies at the University of Abuja. He says the National Bureau of Statistics report on insecurity in Nigeria in 1 year is very concerning. The Bureau said that between May 2023 to April 2024, Nigerians paid 2.3 trillion naira or $1.41 billion to kidnappers in the country. The report also said 614,937 Nigerians were killed, while 2.2 million were kidnapped across the country in the same period. Sani said the report did not come as a surprise and that government should act decisively.
Because if bandits or terrorists can receive money to the tune of 2.3 trillion within just 12 months, how much is the police force receiving from the government? You know, how much are they getting from the budget? How much is the military as an institution getting to execute, to achieve their objective? So now you have non-state actors receiving this kind of money from Nigerians. It's a pathetic situation. And I think it is high time we declare a state of emergency on this issue of kidnap for ransom.
A breakdown of the data showed that rural areas recorded more murders, 335,827, than urban areas, which reported 279,110. Sani says one way of tackling crime in the country is for all stakeholders to act.
I believe these are all clarion calls for the army, the military to sit up, not just the military, the police and the politicians equally to sit up, because some of these things, we begin to go and ask, what are the root causes?
Matthew Chukwuma, a Lagos-based legal practitioner and public affairs analyst, says the government should send more security personnel to rural areas to protect people.
If the government is seriously inclined to curbing this security, they should, as a matter of urgency, declare a state of emergency or security and deploy enough resources. Not a lipstick deployment. Deploy security to all these nook and crannies, especially the rural areas, to protect the vulnerable people.
Sani also suggested that police should develop a better intelligence gathering mechanism to help preempt crime. Reacting to the crime data, Daniel Boala, special advisor to the president on public communication, said the report was aimed at ensuring data transparency. He said in a statement that the report seeks to ensure that information released to the public is data-driven. The National Bureau of Statistics has confirmed that its website was hacked after releasing the data on insecurity in the country. It said engineers were working to restore the site. This is Mike Mbonye for VOA News in Lagos.
The magic of Christmas is lighting up in New York, and nowhere it is more dazzling than in Dyke Heights, a neighborhood famous for extravagant holiday displays. VOA's Aaron Renan takes us to this festive Wonderland.
Dyker Heights, a Brooklyn neighborhood, transforms into a holiday paradise every December. The streets glow with sparkling lights, towering decorations, and the cheerful sounds of the season. What began in the 1980s with a few dedicated homeowners has grown into one of New York City's top holiday attractions. For over 40 years, families have visited Dyker Heights, turning it into a multi-generational tradition. Angela Ruggiero is a New York City resident.
This is a yearly thing that we do annually with all our nieces and nephews and family, and we come and look at the lights.
The displays range from classic Christmas scenes to playful characters like Frosty the Snowman, the Grinch, Minions, and of course, Santa Claus himself. Stasia Lee is a New York City resident visiting to see the lights.
It's really interesting to see the neighborhood so beautifully lit up, everybody with a kind of unique design. It really gives personality to this neighborhood.
Families stroll through the streets, snapping photos, marveling at the intricate displays, and soaking in the holiday magic. Frank Osorio is a New York resident visiting to see the lights.
Me and my wife are taking my son. This is his first time. He's 2 years old. And Dyker Heights, even though I'm from Staten Island, Dyker Heights has always been the place to come and celebrate Christmas and watch all the beautiful lights.
Months of planning go into crafting these breathtaking displays, which bathe the streets in colorful lights and draw both locals and visitors from around the globe. Davor Jukotic is a tourist visiting from Croatia with his family.
I think it's very nice. I think the people who live here, they don't have peace. lots of people every day, but it's very nice, it's different, and I think it's very beautiful.
For a holiday experience that truly dazzles, Diker Heights is the place to be. Aaron Rainin, VOA News, New York City.
That's all we prepared for you this Monday, December 23rd, 2024. We now leave you with Tutu and the song Sogote. I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Studio 14 here in Washington. On behalf of our producer, Mokbeli Yabaru, and engineer, Dan Brody, we wish you a lovely evening. And remember to enjoy the festivities responsibly. We will see you here tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
6 years ago, the people of Sudan rose up to topple a dictator and pursue democratic governance. But their hopes were dashed by a military takeover in 2021 and the brutal fighting that erupted between the Sudanese armed forces and the rapid support forces in April 2023. These events have unleashed the worst humanitarian crisis in the world, said U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken in recent remarks to the U.N. Security Council.
We continue to see war crimes and crimes against humanity committed across vast parts of Sudan. In Zamzam, people have resorted to eating grass and peanut shells. By some estimates, a child there dies every 2 hours for lack of food.
The effects of this tragedy extend beyond Sudan's borders, as more than 3 million Sudanese have fled to neighboring countries. The United States remains the largest provider of humanitarian aid to the people of Sudan, said Secretary Blinken.
We're announcing an additional roughly $200 million more for food, for shelter, for health care, bringing total U.S. support to more than $2.3 billion since fighting broke out last year.
Secretary Blinken laid out 4 ways to improve the situation in Sudan and ultimately achieve a peaceful resolution to the conflict. First, we have to get more aid, more relief where it's needed most, safely, rapidly, and unhindered, he said.
In November, aid groups distributed 19,000 metric tons of assistance in Sudan. That was a fourfold increase since August. Yet to even come close to meeting the immense demand, we need to double that, 40,000 metric tons every single month. It means the international community has to give more to support those in Sudan, as well as refugees in countries like Egypt and Chad that are so generously hosting them.
Secretary Blinken further urged the UN Security Council to press both warring parties to protect civilians, to stop atrocities, and to end the fighting. The Security Council must also make clear to outside actors, including Russia, that they cannot continue to fan the flames of war in Sudan. Finally, the international community must support the Sudanese people as they work to revive the transition to inclusive, civilian-led, democratic governance. We have a responsibility to end this war and to support the Sudanese people, said Secretary Blinken. Let's seize this moment.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.